Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, December 15th, 2016. A committee is formed to establish South Sudan's Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
We all have other stories that will encourage our population to bring forward in order to carry healing and reconcile the nation.
And President Kiir receives praises for his call to start a national dialogue.
But the president even himself did not say, I have forgiven some people who have done wrong to me. Okay, that is very important because forgiveness should be two ways.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's first vice president is calling for an end to impunity and accountability for crimes committed against civilians during the country's three-year-long conflict. Taban Dengai made the call in Juba today after a technical committee was formed to pave the way for establishing a Commission for Truth, Reconciliation, and Healing per the 2015 peace deal. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Government officials, peace monitors, and civil society representatives were among those attending today's launch of the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation, and Healing. The commission is seen as a critical part of the peace agreement signed by President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar, who was replaced by Taban Dengai after he fled the country following a surge in fighting in July. Deng says the commission will promote national reconciliation and investigate crimes that may have been committed by security forces.
We all have other stories that will encourage our population to bring forward in order to carry healing and reconcile the nation. Issues of accountability and how to fight impunity. We must discuss the painful past and we must encourage the perpetrators to confess of their actions. This process will be painful, but it will make us better country and united.
Deng admits the government is facing big problems including insecurity, political instability and an economic meltdown, but insists it is working to restore peace across the country.
We are all aware that the government is facing challenges. Nobody can deny that, but our efforts as a government in bringing peace to our nation is progressing well, although there are others with an agenda of destruction and creation of a state of chaos. We would like to tell them that our train to peace will reach its destination.
Deng says the government is working to achieve peace by reconciling communities torn apart by the conflict and healing the wounds created by war. Officials serving on the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing have yet to be identified, but are expected to include government officials, civil society activists and representatives of faith-based organizations. South Sudan Justice Ministry officials are expected to spearhead the process. Justice Minister Paulino Wanawila Onango says the commission will protect the rights of victims and witnesses, especially women and children, as stipulated in Chapter 5 of the Agreement on the Resolution of Conflict in South Sudan.
Collaborate with the relevant authorities of the Tigono to establish an environment conducive for genuine and credible consultation process. We will have a victim-centered approach and victim protection, undertake mapping of hot spots and the previous conflict patterns and the most affected areas to determine the location for consultation and the appropriate mitigation measures in cooperation with the government authorities at such locations.
South Sudan Human Rights Commission official Fidencia Charles Lado praised the government for launching the Truth, Reconciliation and Healing process.
Truth-telling is a primary step towards reconciliation. As we know, truth is a prerequisite for justice, which will facilitate reconciliation and national healing to achieving enduring peace and stability in the country.
Government officials say they will work with the commission and embark on a national dialogue President Salva Kiir announced yesterday to promote peace and unity across the country. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Some South Sudanese have hailed President Salva Kiir's end-of-year address to the nation yesterday, in which he announced an initiative to hold an inclusive national dialogue. A policy analyst at the Juba-based Sud Institute says the agenda of the national dialogue should come from the people themselves and not be imposed on them by the country's leaders. Michael Atit has that story for VOA from Juba.
Policy analyst Abraham Awolich praises Mr. Kiir's decision to hold a national dialogue, saying if it is implemented, it will give the people of South Sudan another chance to look into the root causes of misunderstanding and find amicable solutions to them. But Awolich says ordinary people should be allowed to speak out in order to have a real dialogue.
I think the national dialogue is a very strategic move on the side of the president to allow the people of South Sudan, who are not necessarily politicians and who are not fighting for position, people who just want to live and they want to live at peace with their neighbors, to sit together so that they can chart a way forward as they need to live as peaceful citizens of this country.
President Kiir said the government will ensure that the dialogue is credible, genuine, and open to all South Sudanese people, and that its outcome will be accepted by all and implemented. Awolich says South Sudanese communities will only reconcile and coexist peacefully if the citizens are able to express their grievances and speak openly from their hearts.
Anything that divides the people of South Sudan must be on the table. Otherwise, if it is a choice of, oh, I only have this thing to discuss, then it is not a dialogue. It is an instruction. But a dialogue, people of South Sudan will raise their grievances, and those grievances are the ones that are on the table. They should be resolved.
Awolich says the dialogue is the way forward of resolving grievances among different communities across the country. Onyoti Adigo, the Democratic Change Party leader, applauded President Kiir for initiating a national dialogue, saying it is long overdue.
National dialogue will solve most of the problems. Our society is a primitive society. We close our leaders. It should have been political parties, civil societies, religious leaders here, like the national dialogue which we did in Yakura in 2010, and the rest of the people will follow.
During his speech, President Kiir asked the people of South Sudan to forgive him for mistakes he says he might have committed. But Adigo says for the national dialogue to succeed, President Kiir should also forgive others who wronged him and free those in detention.
But the president even himself did not say, I have forgiven some people who have done wrong to me. Okay, that is very important. Because forgiveness should be two ways. You are forgiven and you forgive also. We expected that the president should have declared general amnesty all over South Sudan as a good gesture.
Reverend Father James Oyet is the Secretary General for the South Sudan Council of Churches. He says Mr. Kiir's decision to ask the South Sudanese people to forgive him for past mistakes will open a new beginning if President implements what he says.
When someone apologizes, it means he has recognized some of his shortcomings in leading the country. That's the central apology. And then once you apologize, he recognizes your sense of responsibility to be the leader of the people of South Sudan. Of course, it will touch the feelings of people of South Sudan. At last, he has apologized for all the shortcomings that has happened.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A senior member of the SPLM in opposition says President Kiir's announcement of a national dialogue is what he calls a bluff. Peter Adwak Nyaba says the political environment in South Sudan is not suitable for a national dialogue. He tells my colleague John Tanza in Kenya that there's no freedom of speech in Juba, and government critics are usually either arrested or killed.
I followed the speech of President Salva from the beginning to the end, and I really believe that it was just a bluff, because you cannot talk of a national dialogue in a situation of war. We had expected him to come up with a statement stopping the war, stopping all the decisions we have made since 2013, which really triggered this conflict. On the contrary, he has come up with the national dialogue at a time he is actually mobilizing and preparing for the dry season offensive.
But in his statement yesterday, he asked for South Sudanese people like you to forgive him for whatever he has done wrong, and he is calling for all South Sudanese to turn a new page and dialogue. Isn't that very important?
He says so, yes. But, you know, for somebody who is asking for forgiveness, must first of all admit the mistakes he has done. for which now he would really feel remorse for what he has done, and then people would now forgive him. But then he just said he wanted forgiveness for sins, for mistakes which he has not even mentioned. What are these mistakes which he has mentioned? Because he must admit this mistake. There must be an acceptance of guilt that will now make people change their attitude towards him and then forgive him.
The leader of your party, Dr. Riek Machar, I remember speaking to him when he came from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and he said what is important for the people of South Sudan is national dialogue, which is inclusive, where every political party is given an opportunity to speak their hearts out and see what is the solution to the crisis in the country. And that's what President Kiir was saying yesterday.
Yes, but you see, what is in the environment which is really now in Juba is that people cannot even talk freely. They cannot discuss freely. You cannot even publish freely. The newspapers are confiscated. FM stations are shut down. So in which, how would this dialogue take place? Because you need really an environment in which there is peace, in which really people have confidence that they can say the truth, you know. And without saying the truth, then there is no dialogue, really. That's why I say there is just a bluff.
And is your party, the SPLM in opposition, still believing that there is a need for dialogue?
Of course. The solution to this crisis is really people should sit down and discuss it. There is nobody can win this war. Salva cannot win this war. We cannot win this war in the way it is now, you see. Well, so what is important is that people should really sit down, discuss. And the onus of proof lies with Salva, actually, because he is the one now on the offensive. He's the one attacking his army, the one attacking people with helicopter gunships and artilleries and so on, in the villages, burning villages, killing people. Even in Juba itself, you see, where people are being killed daily by the so-called unknown gunmen. How can you be talking of an unknown gunman in a situation where there is a government?
It takes two to fight.
Yes.
So you are blaming President Kiir for continuing the war. What about your side, the SPLM in opposition? Your soldiers have been fighting in Lasso, in Kaya, and in Morobo.
We're being attacked. You know, since the 10th of July, the war has not ended. You know, it has been pursuing until he pursued our chairman to Congo, you know. So the war has not really stopped. He was the one who broke the ceasefire, the permanent ceasefire, and it is still continuing. Our people are fighting in self-defense.
And so now you're saying this announcement for dialogue is nothing but just a joke. If there is going to be a solution for this crisis in the country, where will it come from?
The solution to the crisis, of course, comes from us. But then we need an environment, a real environment in which we can be able to sit down and talk. I'll just give you an example. President Kiir never mentioned in his speech anything to do with the peace commission. He has a peace commission in Juba, and he has never mentioned it, you know. So who is going to mediate? Who is going to facilitate this peace and this dialogue, if not the people in the peace commission?
But he was proposing that some eminent people, persons
eminent?
From South Sudanese.
Who are these eminent South Sudanese who are now impartial? Can you mention one? No, I don't think there is anybody who is really neutral, who can now sit and say, okay, I'm neutral, I look at things objectively and let us do it this way. I don't think there is anybody there.
Let me use your word. If there is nobody who is impartial,
yeah,
how are we going to end this crisis?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. We had the peace agreement. You had the IGAD peace agreement. And we had now, for instance, JEMMEC, which is supposed to be supervising, to be monitoring and evaluating this peace, the implementation of this peace agreement. JEMMEC is now saying that they are implementing peace. And you really wonder, with whom are they implementing peace? And I wonder, you see, if you take the way the government of Kenya has reacted by pulling its forces from Juba, I mean from South Sudan, I think it is a very honest admission of the fact that the peace has failed. So you need another formula. Another mediators, people who will really have more restraints, you know, more clout, who can now impose. Because peace in such a situation in South Sudan, where you have the state which is now controlled by one ethnic group.
That's Peter Adwak Nyaba, a former Minister of Education, Science and Technology in the Transitional Government of National Unity, speaking earlier today to South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. A group of South Sudanese diaspora are gathering at this hour outside of Trump Tower in New York City, the headquarters for U.S. President-elect Donald Trump. VOA reporter Adam Phillips is there and joins us live to talk about the purpose of the gathering. Adam, I understand that South Sudanese are gathering for a peaceful rally about South Sudan?
Yes, they're gathering now. It's a bitter, bitter cold day, but they certainly have come out. About 15 or 20 people are here and they're sort of arriving. I am fortunate to be... I had with me the Peter Quayle, who is the South Sudan International Advocacy for Human Rights Director. And I thought that maybe I would interview him very quickly with you on the phone to get an idea why they're here and what they hope to achieve. First, I'll just ask Peter. Hello, Peter. Thanks for being with us. Tell me, why are you all here today?
We are here today to commemorate the day that our people were killed on December 15th. And 2013 to December 19, a lot of people were killed. 300-400 were rounded in the room were killed. That happened. It was a genocide that took place. And we want to commemorate that. And we are here to call the president-elect, Donald Trump, to put more effort in order for South Sudan to get peace, to have peace in the country. We're calling for a freezing of assets. All the government officials in South Sudan, a strong sanction embargo, because without that, there will be no peace in Sudan, and so many million of people are suffering, and many of them in Uganda, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Sudan.
What do you actually believe Trump will do, or do you think he's actually shown some interest in helping the people of South Sudan, or is this sort of a message of hope?
We are hoping for President-elect to help our people. We tried with President Obama, but Obama didn't do nothing until now. So it's the end of his leadership. And we are hoping President Trump can help and change what is going on in South Sudan.
All right, that's it. We're being ushered out of the Armani store where we sought refuge, and the guy was very nice to let us go there. But I think that's about it. I'll let you know a little bit more as I know, and tomorrow we'll have a story about the whole protest.
That's terrific. Thanks, Adam, for joining us live. That's VOA reporter Adam Phillips in New York City outside the Trump Tower with Peter Deng, a member of the South Sudanese diaspora, talking about their hopes for the incoming Trump administration. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Were child soldiers still being recruited in Sudan this year? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
What do you like most about your African culture?
First of all, our celebration, it is unique. So the second one, I like the way we look for our clothes. Yeah, the way we live.
The thing I like about African culture is, first of all, the fact that it is unique. You see, African culture is unique. The second thing is that Africans like their culture, which is different from the Western people and so on.
When you see the way African lives, it is more different from the continent. So the way African lives, I like so much. The way they dress too. African, the way dresses is very nice. Have a good look.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Children in South Sudan continue to be recruited by military forces and armed groups, according to the children's rights group UNICEF. The SPLA and the SPLA in opposition signed agreements with the UN to end the recruitment and prevent the use of children in combat. But as the fighting continues in parts of the country, a rise in child soldiers is occurring, with 1,300 children recruited in 2016, bringing the total number of children used in the conflict to 17,000 since 2013. James Elder is Regional Chief of Communications for UNICEF in Eastern and Southern Africa. He just returned from a trip to South Sudan and spoke with Kim Lewis about the rise in the recruitment of child soldiers despite the deal between the warring parties.
I think it's saying that there are agreements that aren't being fully implemented, like all aspects of this conflict. The people most impacted are children. So those agreements around peace accords, those agreements around upholding their own signatories to international law around child recruitment that are not being met are, of course, putting the most vulnerable citizens of South Sudan at more and more risk. And we're seeing that in South Sudan now. We're seeing that in these continuous increases in child recruitment just at a time when, you know, the middle of this year, people were very hopeful that the citizens of the country may finally start to see something like a dividend of peace.
What regions are most affected by this in South Sudan?
This was limited to a couple of states around Unity State, but of course the conflict in various forms has spread from that into the Equatorias. There's been reports of violence in many more areas of the country than we saw even 3 or 4 months ago, which is again another cause of concern for the international community, because it just means that those few places where families were moving to try and get some refuge, to try and get some respite from conflict, also now don't offer, you know, the peace and security that they once did.
What types of abuses are the children experiencing right now?
Unfortunately, the children of South Sudan have experienced almost every abuse that the adult mind can conjure. They are being recruited, and when a child, of course, is recruited, whether or not they're in the front line, they face risk of death. If they're in the front line, then of course they see and sometimes commit unspeakable horrors. Children who haven't been recruited are still in villages that are often under attack. Amid this entire crisis, even those children who have somehow managed to escape violence are living in a state where social services are close to collapse. And if it wasn't for, you know, organizations like UNICEF or the World Food Program, then levels of hunger would be even more severe and malnutrition than they are. So children who've even escaped and aren't in direct line of fire are at grave risk of malnutrition, of grave risk of disease, of malaria. Unfortunately, it's a really long list. It's hard to think of a country where kids suffer more, and that's at a time when we realize just that there are many, many countries around the world where children are suffering.
What is South Sudan's government saying about this situation with children?
Well, government remains a partner when we try and work on things like education and trying to get what it would be tens of thousands of teachers trained. South Sudan has the highest portion of children out of school on the planet. The government, I think, acknowledges the enormity of the situation facing children, but at the same time, the UN will make very clear that what is mostly needed right now is peace and access. And the children of South Sudan don't have peace, and some United Nations agencies don't have the access to reach those most vulnerable people. So they're the two things that are most required right now for the kids of this long-suffering, very new nation.
You all have documented that at least 1,300 children have been recruited in 2016. Looking ahead into the next year, what do you see regarding child recruitment?
I wish I had that crystal ball. I think that in the middle of this year, there was increasing optimism among South Sudanese, among those people who work in the country, who work in really, really difficult, dangerous conditions. Of course, the conflict that broke out again in July set children and many others back a long way. What happens in 2017 is, of course, very much up to the government and the opposition forces as to, you know, how best they can really represent the interests of their children. I wish I knew. I certainly know that the dozens and dozens of families that I've met across that country have more resolve and sort of fortitude and resilience in the face of just dire, dire situation. But of course, no one can go on forever when these people have exhausted all coping mechanisms, have sold off what meager assets they've had, are moving around the country, are unable to plant crops. Then 2017 could be a year of even graver food insecurity, again, if violence doesn't stop.
That's James Elder. He's with UNICEF in Eastern and Southern Africa. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis from Nairobi. Social media has helped the diaspora to stay connected with loved ones back home in South Sudan. Professor Matthew LaRiche of Memorial University in Canada has written a book on the impact of social media in the conflict. He joins Goithan Leek, a South Sudanese native in Nairobi, to talk with John Tanza about the impact of social media on hate speech.
I followed the speech of President Salva from the beginning to the end. And I really believe that it was just a bluff, because you cannot talk of national dialogue in a situation of war. We had expected him to come up with a statement stopping the war, stopping all the decisions we have made since 2013, which really triggered this conflict. On the contrary, he has come up with the national dialogue at a time he is actually mobilizing and preparing for the dry season offensive.
But in his statement yesterday, he asked for South Sudanese people like you to forgive him for whatever he has done wrong, and he is calling for all South Sudanese to turn a new page and dialogue. Isn't that very important?
He says so, yes. But, you know, for somebody who is asking for forgiveness, must first of all admit the mistakes he has done. For which now he would really feel remorse for what he has done, and then people would now forgive him. But then he just said he wanted forgiveness for sins, for mistakes which he has not even mentioned. What are these mistakes which he has mentioned? Because he must admit this mistake. There must be an acceptance of guilt that will now make people change their attitude towards him and then forgive him.
The leader of your party, Dr. Riek Machar, I remember speaking to him when he came from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and he said what is important for the people of South Sudan is national dialogue, which is inclusive, where every political party is given an opportunity to speak their hearts out and see what is the solution to the crisis in the country. And that's what President Kiir was saying yesterday.
Yes, but you see, what is in the environment which is really now in Juba is that people cannot even talk freely. They cannot discuss freely. You cannot even publish freely. The newspapers are confiscated. FM stations are shut down. So in which, how would this dialogue or take place? Because you need really an environment in which there is peace, in which really people have confidence that they can say the truth, you know. And without saying the truth, then there is no dialogue really in this. That's why I say there is just a bluff.
And is your party, the SPLM in opposition, still believing that there is a need for dialogue?
Of course. The solution to this crisis is really people should sit down and discuss it. There is nobody can win this war. Salva cannot win this war. We cannot win this war in the way it is now, you see. Well, so what is important is that people should really sit down, discuss, and the onus of proof lies with Salva, actually, because he is the one now on the offensive. He's the one attacking, his army is the one attacking people with helicopter gunship and artilleries and so on, in the villages, burning villages, killing people. Even in Juba itself, you see, where people are being killed daily by the so-called unknown gunmen. How can you be talking of an unknown gunman in a situation where there is a government?
It takes two to fight.
Yes.
So you are blaming President Kiir for continuing the war. What about your side, the SPLM in opposition? Your soldiers have been fighting in Lasso, in Kaya, and in Morobo.
We're being attacked. You know, since the 10th of July, the war has not ended. You know, it has been pursuing until he pursued our chairman to Congo, you know. So the war has not really stopped.
Professor Matthew LaRiche of Memorial University in Canada speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Kenya. Tomorrow we'll hear a discussion about the sources of information that fuel hate speech. That's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Nambi by Saudi Soul. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Shalom,